Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back. You've heard the introduction, and here we are welcoming Tim to our episode today. Tim, welcome to the podcast. Feel free to take a moment or two to introduce yourself as you see fit.
Thank you, Gabriella. An honor and pleasure to be here. So a brief introduction of me. I was an ex-San Francisco tech founder in my past days. Before that was an aspiring politician, or what I would say, president of the United States, first Asian American president of the United States aspiration when I was very young. I went down the business route in college, and I actually started one of my first companies out of school in my undergrad. And I ran and played the SF tech game for about 7 years. And it was in that journey that really brought me into a lot of burnout and the feeling of misalignment that introduced me to different modalities of meditation as well as psychedelics. And it was a combination of that too that introduced me to a medicine that I work with quite frequently now, which is ayahuasca here in Costa Rica, where I live in. And that has taken me down a powerful, powerful journey that has landed me now from what was first in technology and a founder and a CEO and playing that hustle game to living a life that I would kind of summarize as alignment and a lot of peace surrounded with that. And what that means now is hosting medicine journeys for founders and CEOs and entrepreneurs through an organization I work with called One Heart. It also translates to myself 3 weeks fresh into a what we call a medicine campus, which is in Costa Rica, where we host ceremonies as well and programming and journeys and retreats here. And I'm kind of getting my hands dirty to help out with building that out, that, you know, even though the location is now live and launched. And then beyond that, just kind of dabbling in advising and mentoring other founders in the medicine and psychedelic space that have a really heart-centered perspective in approaching this space with a lot of deep reverence. So that's a little bit of a brief introduction of where I'm at and how I got to where I'm at today.
That's fantastic. Thank you for that introduction. I mean, there's definitely a lot to pull from there. But I'd love to start with just going back to your journey. So you mentioned, you know, you started off in your undergrad, you started a company, very much SF, you know, tech world. That was your world at the time. You felt a bit of burnout. And at that point, you kind of started to explore meditation and psychedelics.
Right.
And that kind of shifted your path, if you will. If we can go back for a moment before that shift happened, if you were to compare, you know, where your life is at now, how you're navigating life now versus at the time, what was it about that way of living for you that wasn't quite aligning with your overall fulfillment?
Yeah, I mean, the key word is self-worth. I grew up with a single mother. And they were divorced when I was two. So, you know, I grew up with a family that was a little bit angry at one another. And so, you know, I made a promise to myself when I was very young that I didn't want to disappoint my mother, who was already going through so much, that I was just going to relentlessly pursue success. But if I look back, I really feel that there was also just a lot of hurt and confusion of what was happening. And so, you know, I compensated a lot of that confusion and sadness and just feeling out of the bubble with a lot of overachievement success, right? So I ran for all my student associated student body governments in elementary, middle, high school, and college. I pushed a lot of effort into studies. And a lot of that, looking back, and that obviously led me down to this path of like, well, I got to do more. I got to prove more because I might already feel less than with others just based on how I grew up. That, of course, it would lead me down a path of starting my company one day, But if I were to really sum it up versus, you know, the life that I live now, the key words are sort of misalignment, because I wasn't aware of how much I didn't feel worthy of myself, of the life I was living, et cetera, et cetera. So that pushed me down a life of pursuit of success, of material wins. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you this, like, it works. If one really wants to pursue that, it works. The ego works. It'll allow one, especially myself in my experience, to receive the aims that we want. But in my own experience, it only goes so far. And that's where the burnout started to emerge. The best way I could describe my journey, my entrepreneurship journey, was one of misalignment. And misalignment to me was sort of understanding the greater purpose. I started my company out of lack of self-worth, right? Mm-hmm. So just like wanting to prove myself and feel good that I was worthy, that I had a CEO title attached to my next to my name. And that got me so far where I did start to burn out. The amount of stress superseded the feeling of reward of quote supporting people or helping solve problems in the company that I had started. The company I started was a marketing software company. I mean, I knew nothing about marketing nor software, and that just gave a really clear signal that I was pursuing a business out of my own ego and wanting to prove my worth. And so that was a really just eye-opening experience of what misalignment feels like, especially to a greater purpose, and understanding that the ego can work really well, but in my experience, it only goes so far.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So, well, thank you for that. So then what was that? Was there a first sort of moment where you either came across something, whether that was ayahuasca or some meditation method? Was there a moment where that really started to shift for you?
Yeah, I dropped my first LSD tab in 2014.
Oh my!
And that really just opened up the floodgates in my mind that I never knew was there, and that didn't necessarily put me down a path of like, okay, I'm going to quit my job and this and that, but it did open a path of insane curiosity to explore what was more to this. So the next few years after, I would go on solo explorations in the woods, in the parks, and bring a journal and really contemplate like what in my life felt off, felt misaligned, felt just heavy. And as I was journaling more and more, it became very clear that I was pouring my energy into something that I had literally no resonance with. But because it was working, it felt so good to keep riding that train of success. Mm-hmm. And so I think through many explorations, specifically with LSD as my first kind of psychedelic medicine that I intentionally dove deeply with, that combined with my meditation practice of really reflecting on what did show up in my journey with these medicines, that really brought a clarity of the confidence and the courage to ask myself, am I really stepping into and pursuing something that is in the highest resonance and alignment for me? And every time I kept asking that question, nothing in my body was saying a full yes. So it took another couple years to really muster up the full courage to put it into action, which really led me down to selling my company at the end of it all. But what was really fascinating was 6 months prior to signing the papers of my company to sell, I stepped into the world of ayahuasca in ceremonies, and I asked, you know, in these ceremonies, you ask for clarity, you ask for intentions to this greater being, for this greater essence. And what I received and what I can say was, and I grew up in the church my whole life and I never really received any visions. I received a very clear vision that I was supposed to now take all my skill sets that I built in my company, the business skill sets, the networking skill sets, the discipline skill sets, and now pour it into what came to me was a physical campus of alternative healing, where the Westerners would come, where Western medicine failed them. And this was 4 years ago. And as I mentioned in my intro, like, I am 3 weeks fresh living in a center, or what we call a campus, that focuses on medicine work. And so that really gave me the courage to sign the papers and go on a journey for 4 years of like, well, who am I supposed to talk with? Where am I supposed to go? And I'll say this, the theme of it all, the North Star of it all, was three words, which was surrender to service. Surrender to service. And so I just said to myself, wherever service emerged, where I can support people really from a pure heart place, then lean into that. And let that be an opportunity for the universe to reciprocate in whatever ways. And of course, that's where I met people that introduced me to One Heart, and the person who owns this space went through our One Heart experience, and that's where we connected. So I'll pause there for a little. That was a lot, but it gives you a glimpse of this surrender experiment experience that I've been embarking on.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Surrender to service. I definitely think there's a lot more to unpack there, as well as, you know, hearing more about this wonderful work that's happening at this campus, as you call it. But before we do that, so one of the questions I was going to ask, and you touched on it, was the courage to make that decision. So you said it took about a couple years before you really mustered up the courage. And then that ayahuasca ceremony really pushed you forward. What, looking back, what are some of the elements or the factors that you think really were conducive through that process to building up that courage?
Yeah. So a couple of things, right? One is the continual feeling of the burnout that was happening, where I would wake up mornings where I was dreading to go to work. And that's a very clear sign, first and foremost. Secondly, I was given this analogy, and it didn't really hit me until I received that vision in that ceremony, which is, you know, think back to us as little toddlers playing Legos, and we don't like anybody taking away our Legos when we're playing with it, but we usually give it away or have that courage or excitement or, you know, just detachment to give it away when we're given something or given a greater, bigger Lego set, right? Mm-hmm. And so in that vision, I felt like that was the analogy played out so beautifully, where it's like this company, even though it was making good revenue and it was growing really well, it was me playing small to something that I knew I could do, but it was just not in resonance. And in this vision, it was I was given this bigger Lego set that I was like, wow, this is me playing at my best. Like, this is next level for me to like to understand, and a feeling that really came in, and I think that's a huge factor here. The feeling that came in was deep humbleness and humility. I remembered when I saw myself walking on the campus with the ocean in the background and tall kind of tall yellow grass on the mountains, which is exactly where this is. It's right next to the ocean, and it's dry season, so there's like tall yellow grass with mountains all around here. It's quite wild to reflect on. I remembered a message of like, this isn't just one lifetime's worth of work. This is two lifetimes worth of work. And that was super humiliating. I mean, I humbled and a lot of humility that was felt in throughout my whole body. And so that was another huge factor for me to be like, I feel really honored to receive that, especially for coming from a humble place. And then I would say the last thing that really gave me that courage was, you know, when we feel in resonance, or when I felt in resonance with this, things just started stacking in my favor. And it's like, I don't even have to really try to ask for things, knowing that I'm putting that intention out and trusting some greater power is going to guide me. Things just started stacking up in my favor. So for example, the person who introduced me to my first ceremony I had just talked with him about this vision, and he said, I think you should talk to these two people, these two co-founders who started this company called One Heart, and it just fell in my lap. And that first conversation with them was 2 weeks before I signed the papers to my company to sell. And then they had invited me to their next retreat experience, which was 3 months down the line. And when I went through it, it you know, burst open my heart and really fell in love with the mission. And then those opportunities of me being involved just started stacking up and just so easily. And so I really say, like, another feeling is when we are so in alignment, when I am so in alignment with what I called in or what I felt in deep resonance and alignment with, if it's really meant to be, things will start to really show up with ease. That's not to say to just kick back in our beds and relax and go to sleep every day. It's still attuning to the opportunities that might arise and just paying attention and listening a lot more. But that's it. It's like more listening and being present versus maybe living in a scarcity mindset of like, you know, crap, I need to, you know, get this going now. And like, this means I need to go do. I don't discard that at all. It's just more in the order of listening and being present first and attuning, and then being guided to enact on the guidance. And this is hard sometimes for me to say because I come from a type A entrepreneur founder mentality. Mm-hmm. But coming to the other side of this, it's been feeling a lot more ease, a lot more peaceful, a lot more light as I approach this journey now.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you for that. There's definitely a follow-up question that I've got there. One of the things that I've really come to begin to invite into reflection for myself over the last couple of years is really trying to put myself in the shoes of people who maybe have completely different circumstances that are maybe, you know, to them, those circumstances carry this weight that really makes it challenging to see past that. And I'll make this very specific with an example here. Sure. So, you know, well, first of all, I'm going off of an assumption that, you know, you built a tech company. It was, you know, moderately successful. You sold it, which I assume came with some financial reward,
right,
that, you know, correct, maybe left you with some sort of a cushion that, right, allowed you to have this kind of a bit more room and space. Absolutely. To make these decisions. Yeah. And I think, you know, when I think of someone with a completely different set of circumstances, maybe they're living paycheck to paycheck, maybe they're, you know, they've got massive debts, maybe it's a single income family home with children who go to school. I don't know, you know, the financial situation, among other things, you know, the, right, the time piece is just very limited in comparison. It's far more limited. And I'd even like add elements like maybe have had very little experience with meditation or, you know, have had very little exposure to those kinds of methods and tools that are out there. So for that person, you know, mustering up the courage to make these decisions to align their life with something that has greater resonance for them and you know, obviously feels far more fulfilling and rewarding and feels it like something that really speaks to their soul might be a bit more challenging because of, right, these added, you know, day-to-day things that are going on in their life. And so I'm wondering, you know, to what extent do you think, if you were to compare your set of circumstances to someone like that, to what extent did your circumstances, or you know, what do you think the impact of those circumstances were in you being able to make those decisions and really redirecting your life?
Yeah. I'm happy to not sugarcoat it whatsoever. It played a huge factor and gave me a huge cushion to really lean into this. But what I'll say around that is a couple things. Number one is, like, I never planned or even suspected my life to be down this path. Like, never. Like, my two jobs that I told my mother when I was young was either first Asian American president of the United States or a hotel manager. Mm-hmm. Like, I never thought I was going to be in the medicine space. I never thought that this was going to be my path. And so as I reflect back on it, I'm like, wow, like personally for me, I do believe in some greater power, whether it's the universe, karma, whatever you want to call it. And a lot of my life, because I didn't plan for this, looking back, it made a lot of sense for what happened to unravel. And so I'm just immensely grateful for it. And instead of, you know, kicking back on the beach and just sipping Mai Tais all day, it's like, no, what is now my responsibility with this freedom and this autonomy to like put back into deep service? And so, yes, I have a financial cushion, but I don't act like that as in, you know, I need to be, you know, doing all this all the time. It's just more like I sense it more as a responsibility now to really give back and be in service in a very humble way. So that's kind of the first thing I'll say there. I think secondly is, and you know, I mentor a lot of other first-time founders or people who are looking to start their own things. Financial, monetary, let's call it shadows and trauma are very real, are very, very real. I've gone through it myself. And, you know, my mother was middle class, if not lower middle class, and was a single mother. And I've never been given money, like maybe some very few amounts of allowance, but everything else was self-made. And so there's a very powerful quote from this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, from Robert Kiyosaki or something like that, which says that pretty much, you know, the poor people stay poor because of simply their mentality, of simply their mentality. And if you think about it, the rich stay rich because they have this abundant mindset. And even if you think the rich kid in a rich family stays rich, it's just because he or she is fed all this mentality that they deserve all of this and have maybe been given the opportunity to make that happen. All this to say, I don't come from that. And what I'm trying to really message across is that if there's something that you feel really aligned with and called to, and you start to sense and feel that some greater life is nudging you towards that, opportunities are emerging with that, I really believe that if that was your greater purpose, you would feel very, let's call it incentivized, for lack of a better word, to maneuver and calibrate your life to be in service to that greater purpose. And I believe, at least just my own example, when one surrenders to service or devoted to service, the abundance will reemerge. And I've just been able to experience that myself in my life, in many aspects, financially, but also relationally, as well as mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So my point is on all this is like, if you are feeling like there's something here and you really want to pursue and you feel that there are signals and signs from something greater than your own mind nudging you towards that, if you believe in yourself to be able to make that happen, that's the key there. Otherwise, yes, there will always be constraints. There will always be reasons to not pursue whatever it is that that you feel called to. And that mentality, or maybe that excuse, will be the reason what holds one back. And I think just bringing light and awareness and cognition to that, I think it will be a great first step to all of that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That especially that key that you left us with at the end there. Let's try to move back towards, you know, the presence of psychedelics and medicine in your life and in this campus. Let's start with your very first ayahuasca experience. Mm-hmm. Tell us that story.
I would summarize it by saying it's the closest what I've heard what ego death is, but that's what I could summarize it as. So I had just come out of a meditation circle in San Francisco, and a person had said, hey, like there's a ceremony in 5 days, would you be interested in, me knowing nothing about it and being the risk taker that I am, decided to pursue that. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that short of a period of time. I would recommend a lot longer, maybe at least 2-3 weeks, maybe even a month. of prep time to really get the most out of it, but I just kind of dove right in. Anyways, I went in with the intention of show me who my best self is so I can start working towards that. And as I entered into the experience, I started to go down a tunnel spiral of neon lights, and I had forgotten my name. I was like, crap, what's my name? To just kind of ground myself and, you know, and if anything, it was control. It's like, I'm in control, so what's my name? And I couldn't even remember or recite my name. Mm-hmm. And then I was told, like, if anything intense happens, just breathe. And so I started breathing, and I was like, am I even breathing right now? I can't even remember if I took my last breath or not. And so I went through just this chaotic moment where I forgot my name, and I don't know if I was breathing. And so that was the closest to understanding an ego death, for me at the very least, of like, I don't know who I am, I am my identity, and maybe who I am right now is just not alive because I'm not breathing. And as I was freaking out a little bit, one last advice someone gave me was, in the thick of it, recite a mantra. And so the mantra that really just came really clearly was, like, I come with love and gratitude. I come with love and gratitude because I have no ill intentions or malicious intentions or, you know, manipulative intentions with this work. I'm just coming with deep humility and love and gratitude. And so as I kept repeating that, it really clicked in my head of like, aha, who my best self is starting with love and gratitude in all relations, in all things that I work with, in any moment in time. And a lot easier said than done, but a very profound wisdom that I received from that. And all of a sudden, the sort of storm and clouds dissipated, and I flew into heaven with sort of the rainbow analogy there. And so what really came clear for me was that in these ceremonies, in the thick of it, is when the metamorphosis opportunity really becomes real. Mm. And it's when we choose to surrender, and we hear this word a lot in ceremonies, but what that means is, to me, what surrender means is receiving guidance from something outside of our mind. Receiving guidance from something outside of our mind, because it's what's already controlling a lot of our thoughts and our days, day to day already. It's when we surrender in that moment outside of our mind, and really listen and just choose to listen, say like, okay, I'm listening. What is the message? What am I here to receive and learn? And when we receive it, we shift into a place of ease and calm and peace is to me, in my experience, the wisdom that was supposed to be received in that kind of ceremony. So at least to say, that was my first ceremony and received an immense like wisdom of really restarting all relations and all things that I do with love and gratitude, has shifted a big part of my life. So that's a recap for sure of my first ceremony with that.
That was awesome. And I've definitely have, some questions there, but, so just logistically, how many more ayahuasca ceremonies did you do since?
I knew you were going to ask that. So my answer is going to be a little bit out there because of the uniqueness of the life that I live now, especially hosting these kind of retreats. I would probably guess closer to 80 now.
Okay.
And I wouldn't say that I need 80 of them, you know, and I don't need all of these every few months at all. It's my participation in these ceremonies now are more just being in service. So, you know, the role they typically call is just angeling around, which is really helping people get to the bathroom, switch their buckets. You know, if they're going through an intense process, just sitting right next to them if they really need someone. Just simple tasks like that is where I spend most of my intentions for most of my ceremonies now. I would say half of them, so close to around 40, has been really my own solo work, my deep intentional solo work. And again, I wouldn't say I'm at a place where I need them now. Like, in my meditations, in my breath work, and even in my yoga, or even just kind of watching the sunset, I can start reconnecting to that feeling again. Maybe not as intense, but I can definitely connect to that feeling or the medicine, for lack of a better word, and receive what I'm supposed to receive, even through simple acts of prayer now. Mm-hmm. So, I'll pause there and just see what emerges from that.
Yeah, that's great. So let's stick to those 40 or so that were sort of solo journey, or the journey that, you know, was the emphasis was your personal journey. Have you noticed how they maybe changed over time?
Absolutely. I can very much, like, I think the way to answer that is, like, once you work with the medicine more and more, you develop a certain connection that you understand how to work with it. So for me, like, I can tell when certain parts of my journey are emerging. So it's like, once I drink it, it's like this peaceful period, and then I maybe just close my eyes or doze off a little bit, and then I wake up and I'm in my journey. And I'm traveling, and I'm receiving wisdom and all of that. And then after that is complete, I either have the choice to complete it and just kind of come back down, or to go a second round, right? And that's where you take a second cup or a third cup. And sometimes I will, but mostly I feel very satisfied with a one cup because of the amount of these kinds of ceremonies that I do. Beyond that, there's a deep, deep trust that this medicine is an ally. It's not here to hurt me. It will never give me more than I can handle, and it's here to teach me. And I sometimes think of, this medicine is called the grandmother medicine. I sometimes even just imagine my own grandmother in a tangible manifestation form, just like, you know, giving me some tough love sometimes when I'm in the thick of it, or giving me some really warm love when I'm calling that in. So I really see this as a grandmother essence. And I can see it as if it was my own grandmother. And when one perceives it that way, rarely do we now think of it as like an enemy or something to get me out of my control and be full of fear. And so that kind of shift has really allowed me to even lean in more and more into this experience, into this medicine, into these ceremonies, without any semblance of fear, any semblance of anxiety. And so that really allows me to open up deeper and deeper into this, into the work and this, and the wisdom that comes with it.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Okay, wonderful. So you came across ayahuasca, kind of took that chance. Actually, that reminds me of a question that arose at some point there, but you took that chance, went on this 5-day ayahuasca ceremony journey, and then that, you know, gradually it became a bigger, bigger part of your life, and your vision that you had early on in that sort of the beginning of that journey has now manifested, or at least, you know, quite a bit. So let's talk about this campus. First of all, why is it referred to as a campus, and what happens at this campus? Yeah.
So gratefully, the founder or the owner here is very intentional with his words, because something that we've learned in our own ceremonies is that words are very, very powerful. Words are what they call spells. If you think of even just, you know, words are created by spelling it out, these are spells. So the words we use are carry very intentional energy and vibrations. And I know it's going into the woo-woo, but if you really sit with this and even just practice yourself, the word you choose of trying versus will, there's a different energy that you will feel even when you say that, right? I will try to do this, or I will do this. So I'm grateful for the intentionality of words that the owner has here. So why a campus? So, you know, we thought about, is this a retreat center? Is this a hotel? Is this a, whatever, insert XYZ word. And none of it really resonated. I think, you know, our common language is a retreat center. What I never really resonated with retreat is that retreat has this semblance of an escape. And so, you know, the intention of this work is never to escape. It's rather actually to go into the depths of what we may be escaping to face it head on. So that didn't really make sense. And so the word campus actually came up in my ceremony that I mentioned earlier in this interview, in that this was a campus. And when one dives into this understanding of a campus, the other times we thought of a campus is in our college campus, right? And we go there to learn. We go there to evolve and grow and really step into the next phase of our life. And for those who are fortunate to go to a campus and even live there, it's like an accelerated transformation, right? I mean, think about your freshman year to your senior year. For those who were able to go through a college campus, I mean, it's pretty much night and day of just what we come out with. And so that kind of intention is really resonant with what the intention of this space is. The space is called Reunion. And the sort of tagline is a sacred place to do sacred work. And so when you think about a campus, you know, you think about it from a place of like, you're here to come really receive, to learn, to be humble, to transform, to evolve, and to elevate. And so that very much resonated with the owner. And when I just kind of shared it out, he's like, that's it, that we are a campus where people come to learn and do work. And when they feel complete, they will leave and move on with their lives, right? So I think that was just very beautiful to not make it more than what it needed to be, and to still stay in a, from a humble perspective of what the intention of this place is meant to be.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. And so this campus is where people come. It's a sacred place where people come to do sacred work. Is there a lot of structure? Can people expect structure here in terms of the ayahuasca ceremonies or the work that's happening? Is it kind of free flow? Is it a combination of both? Maybe walk us through what a practical experience might look like.
Yeah. So being very open-ended and honest, it's being created as we speak right now. The campus opened up about 2 months ago and has been kind of trialing with other organizers of journeys and just kind of letting them use the space and test things out. But what I will say is that the programming here is very much meant to combine different modalities from different ethnicities, to different religions, to different practices all around the world, and really bring it together and sort of create this wraparound around the medicine work, right? So, you know, especially with what we have done here has been combining yoga and meditation with breath work and sweat lodges, but also other modalities that could be combined. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we brought in, you know, a Vipassana meditation experience and then be able to step into this medicine work shortly after. There's a lot of emphasis on integration as well, where integration can be literally, you know, what we are used to, which is on the laptop and maybe our journaling work, but also integration can be immersing in nature, which this land is very fortunate to be beachside. And so what does it mean to integrate with nature by bathing in the ocean or, you know, hugging a tree? Another thing I've been toying with is actually putting prayers on a piece of, you know, written on a piece of wood and nailing them on trees so that when someone is walking and they read a prayer, maybe they can take a pause and recite that prayer if they really resonate with the tree or with the wind that is blowing. You know, I always think of nature as a pure manifestation of God, and that's why, for me at least, my perspective is humans crave nature because it's that beautiful connection to a greater power, a greater source. And so, you know, there's this emphasis of integration that one can, you know, live here a little bit longer to be able to integrate with nature, get our hands dirty, maybe grow food here as well as another plan to embark on. Lastly, I'll say is that music and art, I think, are other powerful modalities to combine with this medicine work. So we're in the process of converting a building into an art studio and a music recording studio. Mm. Right, and how beautiful it is to go through a ceremony One of my teachers told me once that these ceremonies are here to restore confidence in you, restore confidence in your voice, in your heart, in yourself, whatever it may be, and be able to, you know, step back into your day-to-day life with that confidence. I think a recording studio and an art studio are just other channels and vehicles to allow one to restore confidence in their artistic abilities. I actually never grew up listening to music, and I am now playing 6 different instruments.
Oh my gosh.
In ceremony. Okay. In ceremony. You know, and these ceremonies have really activated and restored a lot of confidence in my own musical abilities. So to be able to integrate, you know, music and art in a little studio to for people to create and express, I think are just other examples of modalities that can be surrounded with this kind of intentional work.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I just want to take a moment to just appreciate, you know, what a beautiful offering this is. Everything that you've shared so far, and the words that you're using as well, restoring confidence, you know, in the voice, in the heart, you know, in self-expression, in through all of these different ways, it truly is a beautiful offering to offer the space for people to come and do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's a question that comes up for me that, you know, I'll ask about next. But before I do that, I just want to kind of backtrack because I did have a question earlier. And you had mentioned, you know, when you first had your first ayahuasca ceremony was sort of a 5-day, you met someone, he said, hey, do you want to do this? And you just kind of went. And you also mentioned that, you know, ideally there's a longer period of preparation and a longer period of integration following that. Why, tell us more about that, this longer preparation period. Yeah. Why is that important? What does that do for a person going into it? And as, you know, as well, the integration period that follows. Why is length and sort of more depth in those periods important?
So the first thing I'll say is that a quote I love to use is the difference between a drug trip and like a deep intentional medicine journey is the preparation and integration. That to me is a key difference. And so what do I mean by this? You know, I wouldn't say length is so much more important than the depth. And there is a parallel to the depth requiring length of time, right? So the depth here, when we step into a ceremony, we're, from a metaphorical or visual standpoint, literally getting on a rocket ship, buckling up, and traveling into different cosmos. That's the best way I can describe it in layman terms. And when we go through that journey or that experience, there is so much we see that we will either understand or will not understand. Mm-hmm. And I think the parallel of understanding comes from the amount of preparation we have. Right? So what does that preparation mean? It means understanding and asking ourselves the tough questions that we may be avoiding right now. Because when we're traveling in these different cosmos or astrals, we will be reminded of things that we totally forgot. But if we don't understand or put into awareness that this is something that's bothering me right now or I feel misaligned with, the answer that comes or when we see it may not make as much sense. So things that I ask myself and I encourage others to ask themselves is things like, you know, where in my life do I feel like most misaligned right now? And a lot of times it might be our careers, it might be our living environment, it might be our romantic partner, it might be our relationships with our family, it might be even just self-sabotage with ourselves and we're noticing things. Typically, there's something weighing us down that's very heavy that when we put it into the light, not that we need the answer, but when we say that we really want to understand clarity and learn how we can move through this, is what I think will create such a powerful ceremonial journey experience. And so that's just an example of that preparation. For the integration, I truly believe that that's where all the transformation occur. I say that taking the medicine, drinking the medicine, swallowing the medicine is the easy part. Going through the crazy chaos that might ensue is the easy part. The most difficult part, and this is where the transformation comes, is in the integration period. How I describe integration is, what are the new agreements you want to make with yourself after seeing what you saw in ceremony or your medicine experience? What are the new agreements? So for example, if for whatever reason I'm like having challenges with my family and I notice that very clearly and I'm processing that in my preparation phase. In my experience phase, I start to see my mother and she comes up very clearly and I start crying, but I don't even know why. It's during the integration phase that we can just start asking ourselves these questions. Well, what meaning can I put into why I cried when my mother showed up? And maybe it's because I felt I've been feeling disconnected from her, or I've been feeling like I've been treating her really poorly. Okay, so the integration period is, what new agreement do I want to make with myself? And that may mean reaching out every week. That may mean being present with conversations with her. That may mean holding back on the triggers that may arise with our families, and really, you know, suspending that for a moment of time. You know, these are all different small acts of agreements that we can make with ourselves. But it's that continuous behavior from these agreements that the transformation occur, right? Because it's when we start to put that into practice and it becomes second nature is when our lives really change for the better. So that's just what I really wanted to share on the preparation integration.
Yeah, thank you. That was very helpful. And thank you for kind of sharing how you would describe integration, because I think it is important to really to share the different kinds language and wording around it. It's a really great conversation. I have to just stop and acknowledge that. One of the things that I'm thinking about is, you know, having these agreements, the new agreements, for example, or old agreements. Say someone now has new agreements, and you know whether they're doing. You know, whether it's a habit or a way in which they're relating to something or a belief, you know, that they're carrying, you know, there's an agreement there and there's a desire to change that agreement. And now the opportunity comes up to replace that agreement, come up with a new one, and you do that. Now, without psychedelics, I find that it's a lot more difficult for that process to be deeply embodied. Because it's not as easy for everyone in our day-to-day lives to really embody a new agreement, to really like drill it in. And one of the things that I find super just profound about ayahuasca is that it can really take you to depths within yourself that, you know, you just didn't know was possible. You just didn't know. I mean, for me, I didn't know I could access something that deeply. Yeah. And you know, just having experiences like that really opened, at least for me, opened me up to, you know, what's possible in terms of depth, and embodying things. And so when I think about these agreements that you mentioned, I wonder, in that integration process, how do people go? Well, I guess, you know, actually, let's use the examples, some of the examples that you'd mentioned, you know, getting into the water, maybe swimming, going for a walk, hugging a tree, all of these different kinds of ways that integration can happen. What do you see as kind of the relationship between the integration with things externally, and, you know, deeply embodying these new agreements, like really letting the new agreements enter the body or really, you know, solidify within the body? Does that kind of make sense? Okay.
Yeah, the key word that comes up over and over as you were sharing that was feeling. And that's the difference between what I've tried, just meditation, versus psychedelics. And I'm not to say that one is better than the other. They actually both have their beautiful, let's call it, pros and cons. In fact, I would sometimes even advocate that meditation is such a powerful modality because it's very sustainable. Like, you can practice it every moment, every morning, every day. But also because it's practiced so often, it could be practiced so often, that it's really integrated into our bodies more and more, versus the analogy I use is medicine is sort of like, psychedelic medicine is sort of like zooming down a highway and trying to receive and perceive everything that you pass by, versus meditation is walking, right? And you can slowly see that. And so both have its pros and cons, right? I would say at the end of the day, the commonality between these two of creating new agreements and embodying them is feeling. And if you dive into a little bit deeper into feeling, in my experience, it's about, you know, coming back, going to a, like, time traveling back into a place in our minds, in our bodies, and really reliving that moment, and really asking ourselves, where in our bodies are we feeling this? Where is it tense? Where is it light? Just asking ourselves that. And it's really being with that, that we'll always remember why we want to make a shift. So for example, let's say, just going back to the analogy of you know, I've had many times where my mother showed up in ceremony. And I remember one ceremony where literally I was crying because I realized how poorly I was treating my mother. Just my own actions. And I sat with that, and I was just like, wow, I feel so sad in myself for doing that, right? And it's when I really let that sink in, that feeling of sadness and my own, I guess, disappointment in myself, for lack of a better word, that's the anchor I remember in, or that's the anchor that I use for the new agreements that I make. Because it's when I feel that sadness that I get to really choose something differently, and I want to choose something differently. And so that's an example of like coming back to a place of feeling. And meditation, I think we can get to it. It may take a little longer. I've recently been stepping a lot more into breath work, which is another like activation of an altered state, but a lot more sustainable with our bodies, that allows us to feel, you know, whatever it is that we're looking to understand more clarity on. And so again, just the emphasis here, the message here is, whatever practice we're embarking on, tap back into the feeling. One of my favorite quotes that I've learned is, feel it to heal it. And so it's when we feel things is when we can really heal what it is that we're looking to heal. And that, again, feeling is such an anchor to revert back to in our day-to-day lives, especially when we're thinking about our integration and new agreements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. I have to say, again, this is the third time I'm pausing just to acknowledge the conversation. I just want to say thank you for taking the time to have this conversation. And, you know, for me, every time I have these conversations, I inevitably end up kind of really sitting in my body and feeling gratitude and feeling the warmth of the offering and the gift that the person is showing up with. And it's a really beautiful reminder. And so, you know, I can only hope that it's doing the same for everyone listening. I can only hope. So thank you. And you know, I'll let you wrap up with anything you might want to leave us all with to wrap this up. But before we do that, so there's one final question, and you know, I really want to make sure that I'm honoring all the different aspects of myself here. Yes. When I'm asking these questions. So one of the things that concerns me, and with a lot of different things that are out there, you know, because a lot of it is very a lot of things come with a price tag. I'll be transparent. And so when I think about, you know, this beautiful offering that One Heart, this beautiful campus, I imagine, wow, this is like kind of like a little paradise on earth. It's lovely. And then I think, you know, but how accessible is this to a lot of people? Because I would want everyone, obviously, to have access to that. But of course, that's not possible, and that's okay. And that, you know, that also for me brings, so it brings up two questions. One, you know, just a kind of let you sit with that and hear what your thoughts are around the accessibility of a lot of different offerings like this one. And then the other thing is your thoughts around accessibility in general. And what I mean specifically with that is for me, something that I really feel called to is making a lot of the beautiful offerings that are possible accessible to as many people as possible. Right. And that doesn't mean, you know, that doesn't necessarily have to look like every single, you know, campus or retreat center or offering that's out there has to be a certain price tag. You know, I don't think it needs to mean any of that. I just want to figure out how to bring a lot of what's possible, just the potential of all of these different kinds of things to as many people as possible. That's something that I feel called to, and I don't have the answer. You know, it's still very much a problem. So those are just the two things I wanted to bring up, because it really is close to my heart, and I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. On the first front, you're right. You know, the type of offering we offer is a specific type of offering that has certain comforts as well. And with that comes a certain expenses that covers certain price tag. I will say that the campus here is incorporated as a not-for-profit. And so, again, it is a luxury that the owner got to do this, because he himself was able to exit his company and be able to be financially independent and secure. And so this is sort of his legacy project, for lack of a better word, that he wanted to be a non-for-profit. And as it relates to One Heart, you know, as well as Reunion, you know, the word scholarship programs is a no-brainer. It's the least we can do to open up for other people. That being said, I also acknowledge that there are many other retreat centers and experiences all over the world, and I never see any of them as any kind of competition. In fact, I think of it as it's absolutely needed, because have gone through certain experiences in life that really prepare me for a certain type of experience that I know I can bring. And this other person at another retreat center in another country is built a certain way that will offer something very beautiful for the people that they speak to. And so I think of it like from our end, just the scholarship program and really sharing ideas with other organizers and centers is a key theme here. And then at the same time, always honoring the sacred reciprocity side of things. So always donating a portion of our funds to the medicine keepers, indigenous tribes in Peru, to send our gratitude of how long they've been holding on to these medicines, right? Protecting these medicines. So I'll say that on behalf of Reunion and One Heart. And as it relates to accessibility in general, yeah, you know, one thing I've been really sitting with is there's always going to be this question of, like, I think from a financial monetary front. One thing I've been actually sitting with a little bit differently approaching this is, at the end of the day, this medicine experience, what does it bring? It brings a sort of transformation, right? Albeit a little bit more accelerated and a different channel or vehicle, but at the end of the day, it's a transformation. It's a breakthrough. It's a connection to ourselves, our hearts, and something greater than us. And so I asked myself, well, what are other ways, assuming that this model right now is not working, to be accessible financially and maybe even time-wise? Because that's another thing. Like, someone can't just take a month off to just focus on this ayahuasca ceremony thing sometimes, right? Because they have family or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So then I asked myself, what are other ways for us to bring the feeling of what you get after a ceremony, maybe not through a ceremony, but through other ways? And so you have things like breath work, you have things like another one I've been really sitting with is medicine music, right? Medicine music, I think, is a powerful, powerful vehicle to bring to people. I have a teacher here who serves medicine, who also by day, hosts concerts, like sober concerts in different areas around the world. And his whole mission, he never tells anybody he serves medicine, but his whole mission is not everyone's going to take the medicine, and not the medicine isn't going to be for everybody, but we can still shift consciousness in a way that meets people with where they're at. So I'm going to share my music with them. I'm going to share my vibrations and the wisdom messages through these vibrations to them. And I'll tell you, after being in one of his concerts, I'm just like, wow, this is what I always wanted church to be like. You know? So then the way I've been thinking about accessibility is, okay, these medicines are no joke. They're very powerful, and it takes a certain amount of commitment from the person who wants to receive and work with these medicines to do so financially as well as energetically and time-wise. And at the same time, when I think of accessibility, I think of it beyond just the financial side. I think about it where they're at in their lives as well. What are they open to receiving? One thing we say is we never sell anything about this experience, because once you try to convince someone and they have a very poor experience, they're going to point the finger and there goes their whole experience. So how do we meet them with where they're at? And sometimes a lot of people on this planet right now are not ready for this kind of medicine work. Even as much as we want to say and believe that they are, a lot of people are not. And so what other modalities and practices can we offer that still yields a very similar feeling, maybe not as potent and deep, but a very similar feeling and vibration that this medicine provides? And so this is where I get really excited about sharing and practicing myself and offering, practices with yoga and meditation and breath work and sweat lodges and medicine music as what I've been stepping into. So that's what I would share from my perspective of accessibility and how I think about it right now.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. That was, yes, thank you. I'm appreciative of that. Well, like I said, this has been a wonderful conversation. Super appreciative.
Thank you.
Do you have any final... Yeah, no, thank you as well. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to end this with?
Yeah.
Or it could be something else as well.
No, just a thought and just a message, right? Like, especially with this work and still having a one foot in the Western world and one foot into this like deep ceremony work and sometimes seeing myself as just a small bridge for people to use as they step into this world, into this work, is to always remember... the word reverence for any of these psychedelic medicines and work. And what I mean by that is the moment you decide to smoke some cannabis, the moment you smoke tobacco, the moment you take ketamine, the moment you drop a tab of LSD, the moment you chew on some mushrooms, my deepest invitation and encouragement is to just put a prayer or an intention into it. And that act, that simple 10-second, 20-second act, is practicing and cultivating reverence for these potent medicines. And when we do so, do we allow ourselves to receive these medicines as an ally to help heal us, to help work with us, to help mend whatever's feeling broken inside of us? And that allows us to really open up and surrender to that experience versus, seeing it as a drug that is supposed to just that's supposed to just be a panacea that will fix this. It's often misunderstood that way. And so from my own experience, when we see these as medicines and we put a prayer or a deep heartfelt intention into it, even as a simple practice, it's the practice of reverence that I believe will really open us up to all the glory and magic these psychoactives and medicines provide.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you for that. That was lovely. Thank you very much, Tim. Wishing you all the best.
Thank you.
And for the listeners, I hope you've enjoyed that as well. And maybe you'll get to see Tim in a ceremony or two. And that'll be great as well. Yeah, all the best to you, Tim.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And thank you all for receiving and listening.